It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Beam.
All right, a good Monday morning to you, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome into the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn. We're back for another full week of shows, and always pleased when you can join us around your computer or radio or wherever you listen to the show. One of the beautiful things about podcasts is you can listen when you want, where you want. I've had a number of people tell me they like to listen to the barn on the drive home. Some folks do it at work, and some folks just right in the morning when we put the shows out. But no matter how you listen, we're always glad that you found us here at the Bet America Radio Network, of course, brought to you by the great people here at BetAmerica.com. Be sure to check out BetAmerica.com for that great $300 sign-up bonus and a ton of great contests and handicapping events. Lots of cool stuff to check out at BetAmerica.com, as well as BetAmerica.com/extra, which is where you find this show, as well as a lot of great blog pieces, amongst other things. I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend, and I hope the Super Bowl went the way you wanted it to, be it with your fandom or your wagers. Very exciting game last night, and I'm sure it'll be bandied about all week. Folks talking about the Super Bowl, so we'll leave it alone and not touch on it too much here on the Bet America Radio Network. We're going to be joined a little bit later on in the show by Gary Norton, who's the Equibase chart caller down at Gulfstream Park, not only to recap the races from this past weekend, but Gary's had a really interesting life and career in racing, and I think folks will enjoy hearing from him. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to in racing. Probably the person I spent the most time with at the track, because he was also he's the chart caller here in the Northwest as well. He does the races at Emerald Downs. He used to do Emerald in Portland, but now they assigned him down to the championship meet at Gulfstream Park to help out with that. And so he goes down to Miami for a few months every year, and we'll catch up with him. He's been a he's had a number of lives in horse racing, as many people do. He's been a chart caller, he might have even been a jockey agent for a while. I know he was a trainer for a long time, and I think he was an assistant racing secretary for a while. So we'll hear all about that from old Gare coming up a little bit later on. But first, we got to hear about my pick three.
Welcome. Let's go. It's time for the pick three.
Three, two, one.
Discussing Jason's top three stories of the week.
All right, pick three time, talking about my top three stories of the weekend, and I think we'd be remiss if we started anywhere else, but with the majestic performance by Songbird.
Coming to the quarter pole, and Songbird is now clear by 7 lengths. Mirror Rosvo is in second. Jade Princess, Land Oversea, and Street Fancy, widest of all, at the top of the stretch, and it's all Songbird putting on a show for the Santa Anita fans, and this is a privilege to watch. Mike Smith has been aboard some brilliant distaffers, and this is one of them. They can't warm her up. She's all Songbird by herself to win by 8. Second to Land Oversea. She's a warrior third, and Mara Rosvo fourth.
All right, so Songbird with another fantastic performance, and I'm not going to take anything away from her. She's just an awesome, awesome horse. But people are bananas on, I think in horse racing, and probably in other sports too, we have a great desire to want to pronounce greatness and say something is great and amazing and is better than anything we've ever seen. And I saw people yesterday saying, oh, this horse is Triple Crown special, or Songbird is better than American Pharoah, or she's better than Rachel Alexander. I mean, people were saying this yesterday, and they could be right. They could be right. But it's pretty early to make such lauded comments, I think. You know, I mean, let's wait until, you know, May. If Songbird destroys the Kentucky Oaks and then wins the Preakness, then we could start putting her next to Rachel. And, you know, of course, Rachel went on to win the Haskell and the Woodward against older males while getting pressured the whole way. Songbird just goes out and gallops faster than these other horses early on and then buries them on the turn, and then they have no shot of catching her. She didn't face any heat in this race. And part of that's because she's so good. And maybe part of it's because, you know, there wasn't an amazing challenger to her early. I mean, there's a horse in southern Florida right now that I'm sure a lot of us would like to see take a piece of Songbird, and that's Catherine Sophia. You know, if Songbird starts beating the crap out of horses like Catherine Sophia and other runners like that, then we'll start with the, you know, oh, she's better than Zenyatta and better than Rachel. But calm down. Come on. Just enjoy it for what it was. It was a magnificent seasonal debut. And the other, of course, topic of conversation that goes on with this is everybody, oh, we want her on the Derby trail, put her on the Derby trail. And the owner, Rick Porter, has been pretty adamant that she's not going on the Derby trail. And I'm sure that his ownership of Eight Bells and that situation in the Kentucky Derby a few years back is part of the reason why. And maybe, you know, Jerry Hollendorfer has always struck me as the kind of guy who's not going to do that very often, if ever. And I don't know why people get so upset about that. People seem really upset about that she's not, you know, on the Derby trail. And who knows, maybe they'll try her out in one of the races against boys. You just never know. They said their plan is to go to the Santa Anita Oaks and then the Kentucky Oaks. And, you know, the race that I would think would be the logical spot for her, at least from an outsider view, would be, if she wanted to try the boys, would be the Preakness Stakes, especially if you know, if there's not a commanding Derby winner. And that's what we saw with Rachel. Mind That Bird was a 50-1 upset in the Kentucky Derby, and her new connections, who had bought her like 4 days earlier, thought, well, this would be a perfect chance to try her against the boys. And she held on and won, and, you know, eventually beat the boys in the Haskell and the Woodward as well. But I think people need to tap the brakes on that. We see this so often in horse racing, where horses come back after a big campaign or, you know, a good year, and their first start is always, you know, a bit of a tune-up start. It's maybe not against the best field. Now, granted, she did it in the grade, probably the best race offered for her right now. She did nothing wrong. This probably is coming across like I'm putting her down at all. I'm not. But I just think people need to calm down a little bit. But we see that when horses come back off these, you know, off layoffs after big years, and they trounce, you know, certain fields that maybe aren't, you know, the Breeders' Cup, which she did trounce the Breeders' Cup. So, I mean, you know, she's, there's no denying she's the top 3-year-old filly right now. You know, I'd like to see her beat a couple other 3-year-old fillies, and maybe she is better than the boys, but I think people just need to chill out a little bit. But it was a breathtaking performance, and she's just a cool horse. And, you know, Mike Smith obviously gave her a lot of praise after the races. But it was a big day at Santa Anita, along with Songbird. We saw More Spirit score a win in the Bob Lewis. Opportunity finally got his self back in the winner's circle. And I actually made a joke about him burning a lot of money, you know, right before it. And he looked like he was going to get beat, too. I thought Imperative had him. And it looked physically at the wire like Imperative was ahead. It looked like Opportunity might have just got the head bob of all head bobs. But he got the win. And I think a lot of people are saying he's going to Dubai, possibly. And Baffert says he likes a deep track. I can't imagine him being a factor in a race like that. But, you know, maybe he could be. So that's number one of our pick three. Number two, the big card at Gulfstream Park, the Don Handicap.
Flat half mile and heads into the far turn in front, three quarters of a length over Valid. M. Shawish is third to the inside. Mexicoma is next. Then it's a knockout. Keen Ice on the outside with about six lengths to make up. And then comes Made from Lucky and Closing Bell around the far turn. Valid has taken the lead after three quarters in 1:11.4. It is Valid in front at the top of the stretch. Financial Modeling second and cutting the corner. M. Shawish is closing on the outside. Mexicoma's fourth. A lot of work to do for Keen Ice. And on the far outside, it's a knockout trying to get going late. M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th. And it is M. Shawish coming to the wire, the winner of the Don Handicap. Valid was second, Mexicoma was third, and then came a photo between It's a Knockout and Financial Modeling in a final time of 1:47.89.
The great Larry Colmus on the call, the Don Handicap, and M. Shawish, not to be confused with Mishawish or Mishawish, which I've heard his name bandied about many different ways. My guess is that Larry probably either called or got a call and said, hey, Larry, a lot of other announcers, maybe yourself included, have been calling this horse Mishawish or Mishawish, and it's actually M. Shawish. So That's what I'm guessing happened, and this is probably the horse's real name. It's M. Shawish Gate, if we're talking about a controversy. But this is a really cool horse. This is a horse that's got a grade one on the turf and on the dirt. They said probably, again, another one heading to Dubai. The Dubai World Cup is becoming, for me at least, steadily more interesting as we hear more and more American horses going over for it. I know some fans don't care for American horses going over for it, and they claim the old Dubai bounce, which some horses have, and some horses have come back just fine and dandy from it. So, but either way, it's a world-class night of racing, and or for us here on the West Coast, a morning of racing. It's pretty cool to get up at 6:30 in the morning and watch, you know, world-class Group 1 racing when the Dubai races are going on. And so we're actually going to work to get some analysts from Dubai to come on and join us here on the Bet America Radio Network and talk a bit about the racing from there. It's a little weird. Pat Cummings, who for years was Dubai Race Night, he signed on with the folks in Hong Kong to work there. So it's a little weird not hearing, Pat's opines on the Dubai racing via the internet, but still plenty of great handicappers and folks who follow that racing over there in Dubai. So the third part of our pick three is the Santa Anita pick five. We always talk about player-friendly wagers and the low takeout, and this rate wager has just become an absolute monster. Yesterday, almost 600,000 in the pool. The late daily double within this sequence was More Spirit to Songbird. It paid $3.40 for a $2 daily double. So basically what you needed was the early pick three, which paid, $2,697 for a buck. But if you get that 22-1 shot, the 4-1 shot, the 13-1 shot, and then the easiest daily double of the year, you take home over $3,000 for 50 cents. Final payout was $3,034.45 for a 50-cent wager. The pick five has just been awesome. And then on Super Bowl Sunday, it had another big payout. There was only one winning favorite in the sequence, but again, another huge payout. It's turned into such a great bet. Players love it. It's something they look forward to. They point towards it way more so than the pick six. We always hear about the pick six carryovers, but right now the pick five is the bet in Southern California. And, again, today, the pool, 447,000. This is on Super Bowl Sunday, and it's still 445,000. And a 50-cent pick four pays $5,375. You had a 9-2 shot to end it. 9.9 was 3-1. You had an even money in Cupid. And then you had a 13-1. And then to start off the day, you had a 9-1. So it's not like it was, 13-1, the biggest thing, and there's a couple of really logical horses, and it pays over $5,000. So if you're not getting in on that pick five, you're just not living, because it's just a fantastic wager right now. So speaking of fantastic wagers and not-so-fantastic wagers, we're going to head out to a break. When we come back, it's time for our bad beat of the weekend. Coming up later on the show, Gary Norton going to join us from down in Hallandale Beach, Florida, talk a little Gulfstream Park and a little bit about Chart Calling and his career. But let's head out to the short break. Let's hear from our friend Kayla Straw.
Hello, this is Kayla Straw, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, back here on the Bet America Radio Network, and it is time for, I don't know if it's one of my favorite segments or one of my least favorite, because I feel bad for folks, but regardless, it's time for Bad Beat of the Week. Come on, it's three horns! Oh, man!
Bad Beat of the Week.
Part of the reason I think I do love Bad Beat of the Week so much is the intro music has a little Mudvayne playing right there, one of my my favorite bands from back in the day. But I think that song's Death Blooms, but it's got that cool intro. But aside from the point, our Bad Beat of the Week winner this week, and this was a pretty rough one. Jason Fowler, a player out there at Bet America Land. You can find him on Twitter at JD Fowler, Fower. He sends me a screenshot of his bets, and you know, from the three bets that he sent me, it looks like, you know, he's a modest bettor. He's got a $5 exacta straight. He's got an $8 pick six and a $3 pick three on the screen. And so, you know, I'm sure he's, you know, just an average everyday bettor. So he plays an $8 pick six, you know, with that carryover in yesterday's card. He singles Moore Spirit to start. Wins nice and easy. Songbird, obviously, very easy single. So the next race, he's singled to a horse named Kenji Storm, a Steve Knapp trained horse who's 8-1, 8.5-1 on the odds board. And Kenji Storm sits right off the leader and then just parks down the stretch, opens up four, holds on to win by almost two. So now he's three legs deep, and he caught a bit of a price there in that third leg. So he's got one more single left, and then he's 2x2. And his single in the seventh race is Opportunity, who we know gets up to win by just a dirty nostril. And so now, you know, Jason's got to be loving life. He's 4 out of 4. He's got, you know, he's got that one price horse going. So the eighth race, the San Marcos, he's got Flamboyant, and he's got the number 8 horse, Hey Dude. So the two logicals, the two favorites. Hey Dude, just a slight favorite over Flamboyant. Flamboyant wins again. So now he's 5 out of 5, and he's looking for 6. And so he's got two horses in the last leg of this race, and it's a maiden special weight for 3-year-olds. He's got the 5 and the 12. 5-horse Mucho Chrome, who'd run before, and is 10-1. And then the 12-horse first-time starter, Martin Garcia, who's the even money favorite. And I'm guessing, just looking, a Bob Baffert horse probably. No, Hollendorfer. Either way, good trainer. So his horse, Mucho Chrome, breaks on the lead, battles early, takes the lead into the stretch, opens up a little bit by the length, starts getting chased by this horse, 10 Blessings, who's a Bob Baffert first-timer. And 10 Blessings goes on by late at 3-1 to end his pick six dream. The pick six ends up paying, where did it go here? Pays $1,700 for $2. Now, with his 10-1 shot, I got to think it probably pays probably double that, if not maybe a little bit more. But either way, it's probably a $3,000-$5,000 hit and on an $8 ticket. He still got 5 out of 6 correct, and he got it twice. So he made money on the ticket, but for an $8 pick six ticket to go all the way that long with an 8-1 single earlier in the card, Jason Fowler, you get our bad beat of the week on that pick six, man. My thoughts and condolences, because $4,000 is a, and again, I'm guessing that's what it could have been. Could have been even more than that, but a tough beat, and you have our deepest sympathy. So our thanks to everybody who submits for Bad Beat of the Week. You can find me on Twitter at Beamy Awards. Send me your Bad Beat of the Week. And you know what? Maybe we'll send Jason out a Bet America hat. That's what we're going to do. We're going to send Jason. Jason, email me barn@betamerica.com with your address, and we will send you a betamerica.com hat for your bad beat. That way, not only do you get a little bit of money back for your 5 out of 6s, but you get a great Bet America hat to wear around your hometown. So we're going to head out to a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gary Norton, who's the Equibase chart caller at Gulfstream Park. And we're going to talk about old Gare's. I call him old Gare. I've known him for a long time. And we'll talk about his career in racing. And maybe we'll talk about the time that he and I almost came to blows. We came real close to having a fight one day. So maybe we'll talk about that with him as well. Coming up on the other side of this break, you are in the bar in the Bet America Radio Network.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, welcome back into the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. And we are pleased to go out to beautiful Hallandale Beach, Florida, and welcome in the chart caller for Equibase at Gulfstream Park. Also does work up at Emerald Downs and Portland Meadows, the inimitable Mr. Gary J. Norton. Gary, how you doing?
Pretty good, Beamer. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I picture the life of a Gulfstream Park chart caller. Like, you know, you show up to work in your shorts and your Huarache sandals and your flower print shirt, and you walk in for a couple hours a day, call some charts, and head home. Is that about right?
Not exactly, no. Not for a couple hours. It's quite a few hours. A lot of big fields, a lot of work. Definitely the shorts. Got the shorts on. And the, polo shirt, so you're pretty close right there. But definitely not 2 hours and you're out of there.
So, Gary, I've always found that the chart callers, some of them are very invested in the races. Like our old buddy Steve Peary, because he was a jockey agent, he always had to know who was riding what, who was doing what. But, I mean, for a lot of you guys, because there's so much to do in such a little time, you kind of don't get a chance to maybe pay attention to the actual races as much as you'd think, right?
You don't. You end up just doing the information, watching the race, you know, figuring out who was stopped or steadied or what happened to the different horses, and not so much of who it is, but what happened. So you kind of you lose the fan focus. You're more involved in just the facts.
So a day like yesterday with or Saturday with the Don Handicap and the Gulfstream, you know, grade ones, that's really, for you guys, it's kind of just Saturday.
It's just another day with a lot of races and a lot of big fields. And, you know, it's nice to, you know, to watch the good horses, there's no doubt. But it is definitely, you know, you have to be, because people care more about what you put in for what happened in the race, more than what you thought of the race, and because so they can judge it for the form for the next time they run of what happened to that horse. So your job is not to, you know, show the excitement of it, but more what exactly happened.
So is calling charts for a big meet different than a small meet?
Well, it's a bigger deal as far as you have a lot more people scrutinizing what you write, and so you have to be correct. So you want to be correct even if you're at a small meet. That's the way I look at it, regardless of what you're doing. But it's just a little, you don't feel a lot of pressure, but you just feel like you better get it right when you're at a big meet.
Because plus, I mean, there's going to be more eyes reading your stuff.
It's going to be a lot more ice, yeah, and a lot of people, you know, gambling, especially the simulcasts on like Gulfstream from all over the country. So, yeah, you know, you better be pretty close. You better be, you know, get the horses that have trouble and that type of stuff. Very important.
Gary Norton joining us, the Equibase chart caller down at Gulfstream Park, and also a Northwest guy as well. Gary, you were born into a racing family, right?
Born into a racing family. My dad started training horses just the year I was born, and so he trained for about 50 years. So, yeah, I was raised around the horse races.
What are some of your earliest memories at the track?
Oh, I would say for me, at Long Acres, going over and watching the from the backside as a little kid, the races, and then wishing when I, you know, that I got to go to the front side, and I was finally able to at 12, and watching the Long Acres Mile, and it was just really cool. Those days I remember just like it was yesterday.
So your dad was you mentioned a 50-year trainer. His name was Nub Norton was his name. And how on earth was he named Nub?
Well, his name was Norbert, and my grandmother, his mother, called him Nub because she thought he looked like a little nublet of corn when he was a baby. So she nicknamed him Nub, and that stuck. And so he was Nub for good.
Yeah, because I had never heard of Nub until I met you, and I remember everybody would talk about old Nubby and Nub, and he was kind of a legend at Portland Meadows and at Long Acres.
He was. He had a good sense of humor, and he was, you know, self-facing, but also, you know, he did real well, and he was kind of a jokester. So, yeah, he was a pretty popular guy.
So did you want to be a trainer from watching your dad do it when you were a kid?
Not so much that I wanted to be. I just liked being involved in it. You know, I liked the game. I was an owner when I was even, I think 12, I had my first horse. And the horse did pretty good. He made like $15,000 for me. By the time I was 13, I had a little over $20,000 in the bank from that horse. So, I was in it from the start and really enjoyed the whole game of it, the whole horse racing game. The claiming game interests me a lot and that type of stuff.
Gary, do you even have $20,000 in the bank now?
No, but I did then. I wish I had it now.
You did when you were 12. You peaked at age 12.
I remember when I was that age, my parents got a little low on the money and had to borrow money from me to pay the bills a couple different times. And I'd just say, you know, as long as you get paid back, we're okay.
never mind they were putting a roof over your head and feeding you.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was training the horse for free.
So, oh, okay.
You know, I was just taking the money.
What was that horse's name?
His name was Deep V, and my dad bought him and another horse from Clarence Belvoir, whose Belvoirs are big in racing, you know, in the Northwest. and Howard's brother. And he bought two horses from him, and he, my horse went on to make pretty good money over the next couple of years. And my brother, his horse was claimed the first time out, and it won, and he blew his money on a car, and that was it. And mine just, you know, kept building up. So
this is the world-famous Dean Norton.
That's the world-famous Dean Norton, yes.
Gary Norton joining us from Equibase. So you're an owner as a kid. You're off to a good start. And do you decide to go into training right after high school?
Well, right after high school, I went to Phoenix and had one horse that I trained, and they claimed it. And I came home, and then I went to college for a while and brought the racing form with me to class and didn't pay any attention to what was going on in school. Me and a buddy of mine sat in the back and read the form, and that was it. So school didn't work for me too well.
And so
I don't think I was going to do well. So I bagged it and started training horses.
So how do you start training? I mean, do you just show up and claim some yourself, or do you find some owners? How does that process work?
Well, the process for me worked that I had a few of my dad's excess horses and then like one of my own. And then I got some clients, you know, through friends and, you know, just different ways of, you know, I wasn't a real hustler, so I didn't go out and hustle people. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, got them through friends I'd known and a couple of my dad's clients wanted me to train for those of them too. So I had a couple of those, and it just kind of built from there.
So is working with your dad there, I mean, because, you know, all the trainers, you know, the backside, especially at Portland and, you know, the Northwest tracks, isn't that big. Is it kind of weird with your dad kind of looming in the background?
No. The thing of it is with him is I would go ask him something, and he would say, well, I got enough trouble trying to figure out the 30 horses I got, let alone yours. So he didn't really help me much with mine. No, not at all. So no, at first they thought we would dominate racing or something, but I certainly didn't dominate racing, so, you know, that didn't come to play. So, yeah, we were just lucky to win a race every now and again. So,
where all did you train horses at?
Oh, I kind of trained at a lot of tracks. I trained at Portland, obviously, Seattle. I went back east and trained in Detroit, went to Maryland and raced at Pimlico and Bowie. And I trained in California for a couple of years at the Hollywood Park and Santa Anita. And so I've kind of been to a lot of different tracks. Cleveland and Ohio, went there for a little bit.
To Thistledown?
Yeah. Thistledown, yes. Track.
I've been there. There's like a mall across the street that's closed down. It's not in the greatest neighborhood.
It is a pretty tough neighborhood, yeah. Very tough neighborhood. I wouldn't want to see. A couple people went back there, Kay Cooper and a couple different people that did real well a few years later and did pretty good, but I didn't particularly want to stay there. I didn't really like it, but, yeah, so.
Who were some of the trainers, in your travels, who were some of the trainers you got to kind of see and admire at some of those bigger tracks?
Well, the first, when I was at Detroit, I claimed a horse off a guy named Bill Mott. He became a pretty good trainer.
Yeah, he won some
and
races.
And I took that. He's won some pretty good races. And I went to, took that horse and went to Maryland with it. And then I came back to Detroit, and he saw me when I came in the gate with the horses. And he said, hey, I was waiting for you to get back. And he claimed that horse back. It was his, which is now his wife, I believe. But that was his Gallop girl who became his wife. She owned that horse, so they wanted it back. Horse's name was El Puma, meaning the cat.
You obviously moved the horse up off Bill, though, right?
Well, what I didn't really move the horse up, but the horse got out on the turns pretty good. And when we were at Hazel Park, it is a bull ring, you know, 5/8 track. And so I put an extended cup blinker on him because I'd learned that from back in Spokane years earlier. And the horse ran real good for me. Yeah, he didn't win. He ran a real good race. So I ran a couple seconds and thirds for a lot more money. And when I brought him back, I think I put him in for what I'd claimed him for. And he took him back. And so she was mad that he lost the horse. He might not remember that, but it happened. He probably will actually remember it. I haven't talked to him, but I haven't went to see him since I've been here. So
I was going to say, you probably could run into him down there.
I could, yes, yes. He did real well then. He was a Vanberg guy, you know. He's one of, there were several of those guys that worked for Vanberg, and then, you know, Vanberg would be at one track, and he'd have his guys at the others, and he worked as an assistant for him for years. And then I think this was the first year out on his own when I did, you know, had the trained with him. So, and there was a lot of other trainers. King Leatherberry, when I was in Maryland, he was big. There was just a lot of different, you know, big trainers. Charlie Whittingham, have a good story on Charlie Whittingham. That was pretty interesting. When I was training in California, they announced, would trainers Gary Norton and Charlie Whittingham please come to the race office? I kind of thought that was pretty cool.
the two biggest time trainers on the grounds.
Right. And then when I went up to cash a check, Whittingham saw me in line and said, what are you doing? And I said, I got to cash this check. Well, let's get some money for you. And he took me up the front of the line to everybody and had him cash my check. I mean, just a super nice old guy, just great. And then some of the other guys, like the Studi brothers, they were there, and they talked to me about, because they had days in Playfair when they were first going into racing, and they used to have to sleep in their feed rooms and hope the horses ran good so they made enough money to eat. And they told me all those stories, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably pre-Sunday Silence and all that, right?
For Whittingham?
Yeah.
Let's see. That would have been, well, it would have been the early 80s. When was Sunday Silence?
89.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, it was before. But still, I mean, he was a great trainer before that. He had a lot of nice horses.
Did you, one of the guys we always used to talk about who's never in the conversation for best trainer is Tommy Roberts. And I've heard now, I've heard you talk about him. I've heard John White from HRTV talk about him. I feel like he's like one of those guys who a lot of people on the backstretch literally rank as one of the best trainers they've ever seen. And then nobody in the public would even think twice about him.
Well, you know, not in the public, maybe, but even when he ran a horse when I was at Santa Anita, charting the races here a few years ago, in the newspaper it said Tom Roberts' horse, watch out, you know, as a comment thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think he's known through racing circles, but not so much just the average better. But yeah, he does everything right. He takes great care of his horses, runs them where they can win, just has a good horse sense about him, you know. He just I think he quits doing it, he'll do it for a year or two, and then it just gets to him mentally, and mm-hmm. he has to quit and you know, regroup for a while.
Yeah, it seems like he kind of vanishes and does some odd jobs for a while. We saw him show up at Portland with Hollendorfer's horses. I mean, they were winning 50% for a couple of years. And then people would claim him and then never run a jump.
Right, because he knew how much horse he had left. And,
yeah.
And you know, he'd run them where they could win if they ran hard, and he had them ready to run. That's just how he's always done it. So he doesn't overtrain horses. He kind of the perfect job is training a horse, what I thought anyway.
Gary Norton joining
anybody
us.
Can
Sorry, Gary, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, anybody can train a really good horse, but those horses he trained, those cheap horses, without a lot of problems. That's a tough thing to do.
Gary Norton joining us from Equibase. Gary, I'm talking right over you, buddy.
Okay.
I'm used to the broadcaster pause, meaning go ahead, but I apologize for talking over you. But, Gary, one of my favorite things that I've always respected on you is your opinion of riders. And that was kind of all, you know, critiquing jockeys kind of became our sport up in the Equibasin announcer's booth. And you had one of my favorite lines a year ago. It was your first time going over to Gulfstream, and you called me, and we were talking about jockeys, and you go, you know who's pretty good is this Javier Castellano. I said, you think he's not bad.
Yeah, I was kind of half joking, but yeah, he's great. There's just a lot of great riders here at Gulfstream. Those guys are cagey, and they're all great finishers. It's just amazing to watch them. I think that, you know, probably the top riders in the country are just right here right now. I'm not taking away any from the Santa Anita riders, but these guys, I mean, they're some great riders.
Who are the guys day in, day out you like watching down there the best?
Well, Castellano's got to be the number one, and then I would say this Paco Lopez does a lot of great things out there. Saez, I mean, he's a great writer. There's a, just a whole bunch of them that are just really just amazing writers. Lannery, Corey Lannery's a good writer, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. he fits right up there with the good ones. And obviously when in Velasquez, John Velasquez, when he, you know, he doesn't write a lot, but when he does, he's pretty competitive. And they always save a lot of horse for the end, especially those turf races where you think a horse is going to win. Like at home, if a horse opens up two down the lane, it's got a pretty good shot of winning the race. Yeah. Here, that horse might run last, beating 30 lengths, because it's just some horse will take the lead 100 yards later, then another 100 yards later. It's just, it's amazing, really. It's, they're better quality horses and stuff.
Yeah, it's I mean, certainly, obviously, the talent from riders from the smaller circuits, the bigger circuits is going to be big. But we've had our fair share of decent riders in the Northwest. Who have been some of your favorite guys to watch, you know, in your time at Emerald and Portland?
Well, obviously, you know, Gary Stevens has, you know, been, you know, right up there, and Gary Bays, and there's been a lot of great riders over the years, though, that even before them that I enjoyed when I was younger, like Lenny Knowles, Paul Fry, and, you know, Jack Leonard. And, I mean, there's just a lot of great riders that that rode over the years that ended up doing well, some of them just in the Northwest, but others went on and did well everywhere, so... Yeah, I don't think that, you know, those guys, if they would have had the chance to ride turf races and, you know, rate horses in a different way and do different things, but they mainly rode sprint races at our tracks because that's what our track is, dirt sprint.
Yeah.
So they didn't get a chance to really show their full wares, you know, or these guys like Luis Saez and these guys, they get to show what they can do, you know. How they can save a horse for that final 50 yards. And it's just really something to watch.
Did Gary Stevens ride for you back in the day at Portland and Long Acres?
Well, the true story of that is not good. I was training in Hollywood Park, and I came back, and I brought this horse back. And my dad, I had to do something. I had to be gone for several days. And I came back, and he said, well, your horse is in. I said, well, who'd you put on it? And he said, this Gary Stevens. He said, I think he's going to be a pretty good little rider. I said, oh, no, Gary Stevens. So I double jock mounted him off. Put Steve Spencer on, and the horse won. But, yeah, that was my only time I would have ridden Gary Stevens. I double jock mounted him off.
You knew better.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew that. Yeah, right. So that didn't bode well for my, but I'd never seen him ride or anything.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Didn't know who he was, so I thought, well, why would I want to ride this guy? You know, so.
Do you remember who you put on instead?
Yeah, on that horse?
Yeah. Steve Spencer. Who was it?
Yeah, Steve Spencer.
Oh, okay. And where's he now?
he's not a bad little rider or anything, really good guy, but he just was no Gary Stevens.
He didn't win three Kentucky Derbies.
No, he didn't quite match that.
Speaking of unknown riders, Gary, your dad, you've told me one story about one of your dad's owners not knowing about a rider. It's one of my favorite stories. Can you tell that one?
Yeah. Well, my dad's horse needed a rider, and because the rider had taken off, whoever it was, and my dad's owner, Harold Waller, he was walking with my dad, and he said, Nub, who'd you put on that horse? And my dad told him the guy's name, and he says, well, I don't know that rider. I don't think I know him. And he says, you know something, Harold? I don't think he knows you either.
To this day, whenever somebody says, I've never heard of this rider, I always come back with that, too, and say, I don't think he's heard of you either.
Right.
Gary
so
Norton.
That's the owner.
Yeah, the owner, it seems like owners are more particular about riders than even trainers are sometimes.
Well, I think with the trainer, you feel like if you have them ready and, you know, everything, that anybody could pretty much ride them if they just don't do anything wrong. Or if you're an owner, you think, you know, I got to have somebody that's got, you know, a name rider and stuff in order to be successful, which, you know, is kind of true in a way because your rider that isn't doing very good is going to have some bad luck maybe on your horse and you can get him beat somehow. Or the guy that's on a roll and he's successful, things seem to go their way a little more. So, you know, that's judged either way. But if you have a smaller stable, you're kind of not able to get the good riders. You have to go with the mediocre, and so you do with what you can do.
Gary Norton joining us, the Equibase chart caller down at Gulfstream Park, as well as up at Emerald Downs and Portland Meadows. And Gary, people, you know, we all that read the past performances, obviously, we see the numbers that you guys put in. And can you real quickly just describe how each race is charted, like what the process is from kind of from start to finish?
Well, it depends on the track. Now, here at Gulfstream, you know, we've got Trackus. So everything's charted by Trackus. You just push a button, and everything's tracked where the horses are in their different positions, and so you're not calling the race at all. Now, the majority of the tracks will call a horse, the horses ever from the start, and then the next quarter, and the next quarter after that, and there's always a stretch, you know, at the eighth hole, and you'll give that, and you're calling the distances between the horses, you know, all the way around. And you're actually, I think, compared to Trackus, we're just as accurate, the people that are doing it with the naked eye or the binoculars, as Trackus. But, you know, for the bigger tracks like Santa Anita and some of the New York tracks and Gulfstream and that, they've got the Trackus. So, and I think, yeah, they've got them in Kentucky, too. So that's basically that part of it. And then you're putting in all the information of, what, you know, the mutual information and that type of stuff, and all that stuff gets marked down of where the horses were, what their equipment is, and then the photo finish comes in of exactly where they finish, and then it, then what you do is you analyze the race, you'll watch the horses run, and then you'll basically give a preview of what happened to that horse at the beginning of the race, the middle, at the end, you know. And pretty much it gets monotonous where it's the same stuff over and over, but that's just the way it is because that's what happened. But that's your job, and your job is mainly if something happens where a horse is in trouble or that type of thing, then you got to denote that. And that's, you know, just describe the race. And your short comments is probably the most important because most people get programs and they've just got the short comments. And so you don't get very many characters to put in there, but you try to put in something that happened during the race that people would be interested, whether it bobbled at the start or, you know, went six wide in the turn or whatever. You want to, you know, give them some good information if you can. And that's about it.
So if there's 10 horses in a race, though, you go back and forth and watch the race 10 different times and follow what each horse did in the race, right?
Yeah, what I pretty much do is I'll watch the head-on first out of the gate, because especially with at our tracks in Oregon and Washington, there's a lot of sprint races. And so, you know, the start is very important. So if those horses bump out of there or, you know, bobble or stumble or something, then you want to catch that, obviously, because that's a good key of what happened in the race, you know, obviously. So then you'll watch that part of it, and then you'll look all through it to see if anything happened as far as trouble. And then you'll go to your pan shot and you'll watch that horse of where he was in the race to get your whole description of what he did and how many lengths wide he went on the turn, because that's something we're supposed to put in every time now. Mm-hmm. And on an either turn, or if they're going a route in both turns and that type of thing. And that's your pretty much your job. And then I think your only job that you can, you know, use your own judgment would be of how they won, you know, you would say, you know, convincingly or, you know, that type of thing. That's the rest of it's pretty much just the facts, you know. So with that part of it, you would use your judgment of how you thought that horse. It's funny because in the East Coast here, they don't like you to put handily if a horse is hit with the whip from the eighth pole home at all, it's not handily. But I see a lot of horses that are hit with a whip, and they get to the 16th pole, they're six in front, and the guy puts it away, and he's got them cranked down. To me, that's handily. But I think I had five different complaints on it last year that was the only thing I complained about was that I put handily on horses, and they don't believe in that.
Well, so, the weird thing is in the mornings, it's different, too. Like, breezing and handily are different, like, in the Northwest and the West Coast than they are on the East Coast for some stupid reason.
Well, they are, and I just don't get that. I think they started doing in the works, everything's handily, and if a horse is, I think if they're not urged or something, they put breezing. I'm not sure exactly how they do that, but I mean, it's different. Yeah,
I was always taught up here that breezing just meant they're breezing along, and handily means they're being urged. in the morning. And then other tracks, it's totally the opposite, which is just, it's so bizarre that's...
Yeah, well, the way it was when I raced horses and was a kid and everything, was handily was if the horse did it really easily, just like for your, you know, description of the how the horse finished, mm-hmm. if handily would be do it really easily, you know, and breezing would be... The horse breezing along a regular, you know, guys kind of asking him, urging him. And then driving would be if they just, you know, really get after him, that'd be driving.
You ever get owner or jockeys or trainers that get steamed at you for a comment? Like if you say they went five wide and they think, oh, I was like two wide at the most, do they ever like call and chirp at you?
No, I've had an agent come up to Portland and he said, you're killing my rider. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, my rider's, you got him five wide all the time, and he's angling out at the 5/16. I said, well, if he's angling out at the 5/16, and he's five wide because he's losing that five lengths the worst time on the
yeah.
turn. Now, if he angled out into the stretch, obviously he's not losing any lengths. But
yeah.
if he angles out at the 5/16 pole, and he says, well, you're killing me. And that was it. And I said, well, I'm going to be killing you for good then because I'm not going to change it. So, yeah, I mean, that's common sense to me. And but as far as riders, nah, I don't even think most of those riders even look at comments or anything. They're just figuring out who they're going to ride the next race and who, you know, I don't think they're dealing that much. But the agents might think a little bit. If I was a gambler and I saw that a horse did something that the person didn't put down that was doing the charts, that would just be a benefit to me because
yeah.
I could bet that horse next time knowing. So I would never, if I was a gambler, say anything.
Yeah, because I know Andy Serling will call out when things are off or he views them as off.
He calls out everything, but I think he does it more or less to show that he's smarter than, you know, other people. Not that he's, you know, and not for any other reason. And I don't know if that's good the way he does it, but that's the way he likes to do it in order to show that he's a little sharper than the average Joe out there. So, you know, everybody has a different outlook on what they're doing and how important it is. He feels his importance is enhanced if he can make somebody else, you know, be wrong or look wrong or something. Just different way of looking at things.
Gary Norton joining us, the Equibase chart caller down at Gulfstream as well as at Emerald Portland. Gary, we spent a lot of time up in the old booth together at the old PM. I was talking before I had you on here. Me and you almost came to blows one time. And I,
we
I,
did.
For
I
the
watched.
Life of me, I was trying to remember. I want to say that you told me I was a lousy handicapper.
No, I didn't tell you you're a lousy handicapper. What I said was, I wanted to be the get paid the extra and be the handicapper since you weren't doing it, and gave to the Canadian guy, and I wanted to do it, and so I you know,
and I
didn't like that.
And I told you he was better than you.
Yeah, and so we had a point system deal the general manager had, and he beat me by 1 point. Remember?
I remember it was the last race. You were about
right.
you were about
we
tied. Like four
we
winners.
We had seven winners
yeah,
that day.
Yeah. And then the last race, he came yeah. with a price horse and snapped you. And I remember I was probably a little
and
condescending
snapped.
About it.
Right.
But we're all made up, Gary.
Yeah.
We're all made up.
That's right. Definitely.
Well, Gary, I appreciate
I
your
had
time.
I had to back down. I knew I'd get killed.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I said I had to back down. I knew I would get killed.
Oh,
so
correct.
I was hiding behind my desk.
If I remember right, I threw the desk out of the way and then immediately had an anxiety attack once it calmed down.
You did.
I'm a lover, not a fighter, Gary. You know that.
That's great. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Gary. Well, I really appreciate your time. And folks can, of course, check out Gary's work all championship meet long down at Gulfstream Park. And if he makes an error, you know, I'll give you his phone number and you can give him a call and bitch at him a little bit. Does that work?
Great. I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
You're also doing the quarters down there at Hialeah, right?
I am. I'm doing the Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday at Gulfstream, and then the Monday and Fridays at the Quarter Horses.
Is Hialeah like it used to be, like this amazingly beautiful track? Is it still pretty well kept up and looking good?
It is. You know, it's funny there. It is looking better. They're fixing it up. I mean, those guys are in there working on it continually. I'm thinking that they might try to run thoroughbreds again there pretty quick.
Yeah, that's what I've heard that they want to. I didn't know if that was coming to
And that guy that owns it, I guess, yeah, he's got some pull, so it's a possibility. But he's definitely doing a lot of maintenance, just fixing up real nice. So, you know, the interiors and stuff, you know, that kind of had deteriorated. The exterior still looks pretty good. You know, it needs some work too, but yeah, they're putting a lot of work into it. They're working every day, you know.
Very cool.
So, they're doing something.
Cool. Well, I always appreciate talking to you, and we'll catch up with you again sometime soon, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right, Gary Norton joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. We'll be back after this short timeout. You're in the barn.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, it's back here in the barn, and my thanks to Gary Norton for joining us today. My thanks for you, the listener, for joining us here at the Bet America Radio Network. Don't forget, you can always contact the show, barn@betamerica.com, barn@betamerica.com. You can find me on Twitter, @BeamyAwards. That's probably the two best ways to get a hold of me. Also, don't forget to follow us at Bet America on Twitter. And check out betamerica.com. Again, we got some really cool stuff going on there, tournaments. Great promotion, especially if you're a new player. That $300 initial match deposit, one of the best deals around as far as online wagering. So check us out, betamerica.com. We'll catch up with you guys tomorrow. Hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Monday. We'll see you next time in the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network.